and depress you. We're going to actually give you concrete things you can do to make this world we live in a better place. I'm Joanne Hardesty. Thank you very much, Steve, for making me sound great as always. Have a great day. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that bitter is cold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right.
And good morning. KBOO, KBOO Portland is your community radio station. It's Thursday morning, a minute before 9 o'clock. In a half hour, join us for Per Fagerang hosting Fight the Empire, connecting history with the latest world events. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll hear Flashpoints for an hour, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with the award-winning writer Rebecca Mackay, whose stories have appeared in four consecutive editions of the Best American Short Stories, about her new collection, Music for Wartime. At 11 today, Patricia Welsh, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford host Black Book Talk, a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African American authors. That's all coming up right after Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Teresa Mitchell is up next.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present The Yes Men Are Revolting as part of the KBOO at the Clinton monthly film series. The Yes Men Are Revolting is a documentary directed by Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno, which follows the comedy troupe The Yes Men as they stage phony press releases and events to bring attention to environmental dangers and corporate greed. Again, that's The Yes Men Are Revolting, Thursday, August 13th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. My dear partner Ani turned me on to an article in the LA Times. And it's quite a shocker. I want to pass on some of it to you. You can find it at latimes.com, and it's by Molly Hennessy Fisk. And reporting from Houston, she writes, Delmi Cruz fled Honduras in September with her son Alexis, 11 years old, illegally crossing the border into the U.S. and ending up at a family detention center in rural Texas. And she quotes Cruz saying, I worked immediately in order to have something to eat to buy treats for my son, end quote. Cruz, 36 years old, cleaned bathrooms, hallways, and other areas of the government-contracted detention center for $3 a day. At the commissary, a bag of potato chips costs $4. Bottled water is $2. The facility in Karn City is run by Geo Group, the country's second largest prison company. It was voluntary, Cruz said of her work there, but it wasn't fair. So I want to depart from that text, which, as I was saying, is by Molly Hennessy Fisk. Find it at latimes.com. And say that we have that right here in Portland as well. It's at the corner of McAdam. And let's see, what is that cross street? Has the spaghetti factory on it. It's Bancroft. Southwest Bancroft and McAdam. Yep, we've got our own dungeon going on. But returning to the article, Cruz encapsulates the sentiments of critics who question how detainees are used to keep detention centers running. Immigrant advocates say detainees are underpaid and have been removed from their jobs as punishment, which is a funny thing, you know, speaking for myself, to be removed from a $3 a day job when the potato chips are $4. That's a punishment, but anyway. Lawsuits in Colorado and Massachusetts, she writes, claim the work program isn't voluntary at all. Unauthorized immigrants at family and other detention centers are paid $1 to $3 a day. $1 to $3 a day. Through the Detainee Voluntary Work Program, they clean, cook, launder, landscape, and perform other jobs. Skipping ahead in the article, which is very much worth reading, is a quote by Carl Takei, a staff attorney with the ACLU National Prison Project, who recently visited the Family Detention Center, must not have been easy, in Dilley, Texas. He said, "We have a name for locking people up and forcing them to do real work without wages. It's called slavery." So that's in the LA Times. And keeping with the prison theme here, Paul Spector, registered nurse, was fired from his job with the California prison system. And he was featured in, I believe it was an ABC news video a year or so ago, exposing just how bad things were there. And he has an article on the web as well. It's on wordpress.com under Hendu39, H-E-N-D-U-3-9. And I want to pass some of that on to you as well, because it is shocking and it is an analysis of what happened or what may have happened to Sandra Bland. He says he worked as an RN at a California state prison where staged suicides occurred regularly. He writes, "I fought for my patients. I know how the cover-up works, and I have some insights." In 2012, he says, "I was hit by a truck, so this paper is done with a lot of help, individuals risking jobs and lives." And then he gets into the meat of it, saying, "Behind badges and rank, sociopaths lurk in American prisons. Cameras are their enemy. With scant information, some of our conclusions will be proven wrong. As more is known, we feel there will be more lies, inconsistencies, and abuse uncovered. With more data will come more clarity, but the code of silence must be penetrated." He writes, "Prison deaths from mistreatment are mislabeled suicide, allowing continued abuse and avoiding lawsuits." He writes, "I spent 8 years trying to stop the practice that killed Sandra Bland. Sandra's capture, abuse, and lynching is a hate crime. Usually the facts are buried with the bodies, thousands of bodies. But this is Sandra Bland, star of Sandy Speaks. In prison," he writes, "infliction of mental and physical agony on helpless captives provides sexual pleasure to sick individuals. No penetration is needed. Violent predators value power and control more. Sandra's treatment, particularly isolation, are techniques found in CIA prisons and at Guantanamo Bay. They are unbearable and leave no marks. The UN calls it torture. A big sociopathic thrill is causing the victims so much pain that they kill themselves." He writes, "At my former prison workplace, California Men's Prison, a sociopath's playground, practice professionals used drug overdoses combined with the agony in the setting of strict isolation and neglect to induce suicide." And he has the word suicide in quotation marks. He writes, "Often the target is provided with a sharp object or a plastic bag. It's still not suicide. Sometimes, though, it's a murder made to look like suicide." And then addressing Sandra, he writes, "From the beginning, your driving is fine. Officer Insignia spots you and does a U-turn. Driving his cruiser aggressively, you pull over, unaware he is a predator. His act is for the camera, smoothly creating and escalating a confrontation to disguise your kidnapping as an arrest. He plans to assault you. This is about power and control, not your driving or your cigarette. He writes, using threats and a weapon, Sandra is forced from her car. Everything that follows is for the entertainment of her abductors and has nothing to do with lawful detention whatsoever. After stealing your phone, he writes, and removing you from camera range, the coward attacks. Wearing a sheet, he might be okay with video, but he needed the uniform to track Sandra into surrendering. The attack is vicious. Serious pain from metal cuffs and a wrist twist forces her to pull away. A practice technique, part of a takedown. Following you to the ground, straddling you with knee on your spine and neck is the stuff of bondage and humiliation pornography, as is his screaming at you to stop fighting as he inflicts the worst pain of your life. This sixth scenario, he writes, is experienced primarily by sexual assault victims. I've treated these injuries in ERs. They are consistent with gang rape. Like Sandra, not all such victims survive. Totally inappropriate here, of course. Even without penetration, this is a savage, ultimately fatal sexual assault. And Spectre continues, he enslaves your body, but not your spirit. That's why he pounded your head into the ground. When terror and agony couldn't break you, he went after your mind. A strong, smart black woman has no place in his world, so he tried to kill you. He was afraid you would speak. Others joined in assaulting you off camera, trusting the code of silence to protect them. You now need an ambulance. And he writes, as an ER nurse and a paramedic, I'm angry your request was denied. Confused and injured, your booking photo reflects trauma, both physical and psychological. Isolation, as used in North Korea, breaks POWs. Victims like Michelle Knight say it's worse than the beatings, rapes, and starvation. It causes brain damage. Forcing Sandra to endure this additional torture was as cruel and as unusual a punishment as can be imagined. In fact, it was a death sentence. No trial needed. Spectre writes, my patients were regularly poisoned with gabapentin and other drugs. Addressing Sandra again, he says, your THC ingestion in jail is poisoning too, even if you took it willingly. After being cavity searched, you take nothing into the jail, and you eat what they give you, or you'll be force-fed. Pot may have made you easier to kill and to pin your death on drugs. Blaming pot for your death indicates desperation. The plastic bag, one of the few items in your cell, is too convenient and is not supposed to be there. Deadly as a gun or knife. Don't be fooled or misled. It's not incompetence, not a mistake. It's a weapon. It's there for a reason. Everyone working in prison knows this. Suicided for a traffic ticket, this screams setup. 3 days, he writes, and your wounds are still filled with dirt, infected. No TD shot, he asks, no pain or fever meds, no antibiotics. Neosporin, ice, no x-rays for your wrists, arms, shoulders, ribs, and neck. Did you even get a Band-Aid? Lab work, did you get a CT after the bad man, happy you had epilepsy, pounded your head into the ground? Spectre writes, the intake forms with questions on depression and suicide. Who filled them out? It should have been done with medical staff, but they would have treated your wounds. Seeing that you are too traumatized to sign, corrected discrepancies, set up 15-minute checks, a suicide watch, and seizure precautions at the very least. Ignoring dozens of cuts, there is no possible excuse. This paperwork, he writes, reflects not just incompetence, but intentional deceit. In death, he writes, your body appears to be dehydrated, probably from neglect, fever, and internal injuries. Video shows guards drinking bottled spring water in front of you. He writes, at California Men's Colony, disabling the sink to force victims to use the toilet for drinking induced dehydration. Using physical and psychological abuse, they sickened and tortured you beyond human understanding. Fellow prisoners were prevented from cleaning your wounds or, God forbid, comforting you. Exchanging your pretty dress for ugly Pepto-Pink, Officer Insignia gave your broken body to his co-workers, lying in his report. He doesn't want you to speak, not ever. An unbroken chain of cruelty stripped you, a champion of freedom, of all freedom, from smoking a cigarette to breathing air. No life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness for you. To these uncaring monsters, it's a fun sport, a prison lynching they fully expect to get away with. Nothing to do with a traffic ticket or a cowardly Officer Insignia's injuries. These are the actions of sociopaths and racists, armed violent predators using badges as a weapon. Events during and after your killing are the result of planning. It is even possible you were targeted before the phony traffic stop, as officers can track plates. Locking you in a room with a dead phone and garbage bag was intentional, effective, in separating you from your loved ones in a rescue. The non-working phone also justifies taking you to other locations, supposedly out of kindness, but it's a ruse. If you were removed from camera view, I suspect the worst. Spectre writes, at the California Men's Colony, this would mean humiliation and the phone book therapy, that is, beatings with objects that leave no mark. Waterboarding and other airway obstruction techniques like suffocation with a plastic bag are popular and also leave no marks. The rule is, keep silent or it will happen again. In California, doctors incorrectly certifying suicides are paid by the state. Texas seems no different. The organization responsible for the sheriff, Officer Insignia, and the incredibly negligent prison staff are given every opportunity to do a thorough professional job of tampering with the evidence. Spectre writes, the fact your body did not show signs of a violent struggle is meaningless. Drugged or unconscious, restrained or not, the captive is 100% helpless. Use of a plastic bag to make murder look like suicide is a known prison technique. As a suicide method, it's hard to do with two good arms. Beyond her now limited physical abilities, not part of Sandra's knowledge base. No defensive wounds will be found if the killers are prison workers. A big part of the game is proving they are smarter than the law by getting away with it. The FBI teaches them evidence procedure. Gloves on, killing with a plastic bag is easy. No prints, no struggling, no evidence. Inspector writes, with over 30 years experience, including in a forensic state mental hospital, I assure you this is not, and for numerous reasons, could not be suicide. Her death is a setup. It is staged. Sandra was kidnapped, violently assaulted, and killed. She did not take her own life with a planted garbage bag. Prisons excel in cover-ups. False reports and coordinated lies now discredit law enforcement nationwide. Black lives continue to slip away as grand juries look away. Supported by tax dollars, teams of lawyers, and military hardware, the carnage will not be stopped by bad publicity or wishful thinking. Not in Waller County, Texas, state prisons, or anywhere else. And that's by Paul Spector, RN. Use a search engine to find that, or it's at hendu39.wordpress.com. And this from In These Times. If you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell. That was opinion from a former registered nurse in the California prison system. In These Times writes, United Auto Workers Local 2865, the union representing 13,000 teaching assistants and other student workers throughout the University of California, called on the AFL-CIO to end its affiliation with the International Union of Police Associations. In a resolution passed by its governing body on July 25th, the resolution came in the wake of a letter written by the UAW's Black Interest Coordinating Committee. The group formed in December 2014 in response to the acquittals of police officers in the deaths of Mike Brown and Eric Garner and is largely inspired by recent actions in the Black Lives Matter movement. With the letter, BICC aims to start a really difficult conversation with a labor movement that has in the past and needs to continue to have around the intersections of race and labor, economic privation, and racial disparity. According to BICC member Brandon Buchanan, a graduate student currently studying sociology at UC Davis, who serves as head steward with the union. The letter charges that police associations operate in ways that are antithetical to the mission statement of the AFL-CIO, particularly its stated goal to fulfill the yearning of the human spirit for liberty, justice, and community, to advance individual and associational freedom, and to vanquish oppression, privation, and cruelty in all their forms. And departing from that article, and speaking for myself, I really don't see how an armed group with that much power is a union. Or if it is, then I insist that all unions be provided with tracked tanks, M14s, and sidearms. Let's just even the playing field, shall we? But they write, the letter charges that, about to repeat myself, it provokes historical evidence to its allegations, saying police provides historical evidence, saying police unions in particular emerge out of a long history of police intervention in labor politics and its complicity in racial violence. Before referencing deadly disputes with activist workers in the 19th century, the defense of Jim Crow segregation, the lobbying that enabled the circumstances of Freddie Gray's death, and the crackdown on the Occupy movement across the country as examples of American police acting as a violent suppressive force. So that again is at inthesetimes.org. I think, well, maybe it's inthesetimes.com. I forget. You can find it in these times. Time is 9:19. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Per Fagren coming up at 9:30. You'll want to be here for that. And I wonder if you are listening on a smartphone device or on a computer using our KBOO.fm, our live streaming. If so, I'm glad that you're on, and I hope that you will consider clicking the tip jar to add to our coffers here, because that's how we do it. Everyone contributes a little bit. Thousands of members, a little bit from each one of you. I contribute $25 a month, and I'm very proud to do that for the community and for KBOO Radio, which is something I very much believe in KBOO Radio. And I've been doing this broadcast for more than a quarter century, and it's been very good for me, and I hope that it has been informational and inspiring. KBOO.fm. And I would also like to say, before I go on to the next topic here, that you may want to consider getting yourself a pocket radio. I found an excellent one. I had to experiment. I've tried at least three small pocket radios. One was by Philips, and I've kind of anticipated that that would be a good one. A very slender black model with an extendable antenna. It's a piece of crap. Don't buy it. There's one by Panasonic, which is in the traditional box shape of AM/FM radio, and it's pretty serviceable. It's not designed to last a long time, but it holds together pretty well, and it's only $13. So I've had some of those, and I, you know, at that price, I kind of don't mind going through it after a while. But the one I'm really pleased with, you can get for under $40 on the web, and it's a Grundig model, and I forget the exact model, but it's an AM/FM shortwave. And very well put together. The only problem is it's kind of excessive on battery drainage. So when I'm not using it, I pull the batteries out. But considering I can get AM, FM, and shortwave on the thing, I kind of don't mind. So that's my review. And I do suggest, especially since the smartphone corporations are balking so hard at activating the FM chip that is already, I mean, you can already get radio in your phone if they would allow it to happen, but it's blocked. Corporations will not unblock it so far, or they do so partially. I haven't been able to unblock mine. So why not get a radio? They don't cost that much. The battery, you don't have to charge the batteries every day. Batteries last for weeks or months. And don't have to pay to turn it on, and you won't be tracked when you do. Like when you're listening to me. What are you listening to me on? I hope that it's on a non-trackable. Well, it's not absolutely untrackable, but won't be tracked. Let's put it that way. FM radio. KBOO Portland, I'm Teresa Mitchell from thesoccer.is. On July 27th, Russia has no plans to deploy Tupolev 22 M3 bombers in Crimea. The Russian Air Force commander, Colonel Bondarev, stated Russia had enough warplanes in Crimea to ensure, as he said, clear blue sky over us. According to earlier reports, 10 Tupolev 22 M3 bombers were temporarily deployed in Crimea during a surprise combat readiness check this spring. On July 29th, Russia's new generation anti-aircraft missile systems, S-400, the NATO reporting name SA-21 Growler, have been deployed on the Kamchatka Peninsula. In the Russian Far East, the combat hardware has assumed combat positions near the port cities of Petropavlovsk-Kamchatsky, which serves as the Pacific Fleet's primary naval base, Gelizovo, which hosts the fleet's air base, and Vilyuchinsk, which accommodates the fleet's submarine base. And just speaking for myself again, the significance of the S-400s is hard to overestimate, because S-300 is pretty much unstoppable by U.S. aircraft. S-400 pretty much guarantees that U.S. aircraft will not be invading any area where they are deployed. You hear about U.S. aircraft of various types, vertical takeoff and landing planes, both jet and turboprop type. You hear about stealth bombers, and I think Americans are trained to be proud of their, you know, swept wing, futuristic looking warcraft. And they are pretty impressive looking, but none of them can get past these missiles. Absolutely not. And when you see them deployed, they are deployed to countries that do not have the money or connections for advanced anti-aircraft missiles, which are much faster than winged aircraft. Much. The era of winged aircraft bombing of major countries, countries that can defend themselves with this type of missile, is over. They're just a very expensive gesture towards the past. They look great. They get people to swell up their chests and salute, and they cost billions and trillions, and they're worthless. Dateline July 30th, Russia's airborne forces are building up the strength of airborne assault divisions to complement them with a third regiment. A rapid reaction force will be created on the basis of airborne troops. According to a source in the general staff, the paratroop strength will grow noticeably from 45,000 men to 60,000. The source also mentioned plans for restoring the 104th Airborne Assault Division and creating a new Airborne Assault Brigade. This sort of thing, speaking for myself, this is reaction to constant provocation from the U.S., from NATO, which has far more wealth invested in military equipment and has been very provocative towards the Russians. Dateline July 29th, Russian Defense Ministry reportedly plans to create two new battle tank armies, the 1st Guards Tank Army and the 20th Guards Combined Army in the Western Military District by December 1st. And they talk about their tank. Armada is a heavily unified platform serving as a base for a tank and infantry combat vehicle. The new battle tanks have received unmanned turrets, all digital control, and isolated armored cruel crew capsules. I made up the cruel part. The new electronics will make the tanks part of a network which also includes drones, electronic countermeasure systems, and targeting devices. And the creators say it will take less than a minute after a target is detected for exact coordinates to be transferred to various weapons crews. So you can find all that at thesoccer.is. Time is 9:26. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. There's an article in Global Research by Stephen Lindman on global derivatives. $1.5 quadrillion time bomb. When you start talking quadrillions, you're talking money. He writes, when investing becomes gambling, bad endings follow. The next credit crunch could make 2008 and 2009 look mild by comparison. The Bank of International Settlements data show about $700 trillion in global derivatives. And speaking for myself, that's the parts that they show. Nature of these swaps is that they are off the board. Anyway, along with credit default swaps and other exotic instruments, the total notional derivatives value is about $1.5 quadrillion, about 20% more than in 2008, beyond what anyone can conceive, let alone control if unexpected turmoil strikes. Once again, I speak for myself. I have been told, and it's been pointed out to me, well, let's say pointedly, that these are notional values and that no one expects to get paid more than 20 to 50%. But 20 to 50% of 1.5 quadrillion is more cash than exists on planet Earth. Returning to the article, the late Bob Chapman predicted it, so does Paul Craig Roberts. It could destroy Western civilization, he believes. Financial deregulation turned Wall Street into a casino with no rules except unrestrained making money. Catastrophic failure awaits. It's just a matter of time. Alan Brown calls the derivatives casino a last-ditch attempt to prop up a private pyramid scheme and says it is slowly crumbling under its own weight. For years, Warren Buffett called derivatives financial time bombs for economies and ordinary people. Unless collateralized or guaranteed, their worth depends on the creditworthiness of counterparties. Earnings on derivatives are wildly overstated, Buffett explains, because they're based on estimates whose inaccuracy may not be exposed for many years. When corporate bosses ask financial executives how profits look in any quarter, they in turn ask how much do you want. Then they manipulate things to oblige when told. Since 2008, two big-to-fail banks consolidated to much greater size than ever, their financial and political powerhouses controlling world economies to their own advantage. There's much more to that article. You can find it at globalresearch.ca, article Global Derivatives 1.5 Quadrillion Time Bomb by Stephen Lindman, L-E-N-D-M-A-N. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, the People's Radio Station, on 90.7 FM on our main transmitter up on the West Hills. Great big proud white and red thing. And on other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia. And if you're listening on KBOO.FM, once you click the tip jar and join KBOO, and it is via KBOO.FM that we go out to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fograng, and the show is Fight the Empire. And I'm going to start out today with a quote from the German playwright Friedrich Schiller.